It's a big week for a lot of people my age-ish. The 55 and over crowd are lined up and in the queue for their vaccinations. So we are getting there, little by little. And by the time this airs, I will have had mine. But someone asked me recently if I was excited about it. And I said I was, but then I wondered, well, what am I excited about? Maybe relieved is a better word. I don't know. I think I'm relieved that the herd will soon be safer and we can start to rejoin the world and open up the borders. Well, it's been a struggle for so many of us in so many ways. And it is a stark reminder that we take so much for granted. Our ability to wander about at whim, visit our families, and be physically connected. It's just been stifled for a very long time. And I think staying connected has been all we can do in whatever way we can. And it's a little of why I actually started this podcast too, to explore why and how people are connected and how it feels to belong or not to belong. Well, this week's guests have something to say about all of that. They are Venerable Dan and Venerable Eli, two Buddhist monks living on PEI at the Great Enlightenment Buddhist Institute Society Monastery in Little Sands. Here is my chat with Venerable Dan and Venerable Eli. Well, today is a very special day. I have with me Venerable Dan and Venerable Eli, and they have said yes to being on the Belong podcast. So I'm very grateful for you to be here, and thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
So we've never met, but I do know a little bit about you in the sense that when you came to Prince Edward Island, you came here because you are part of a community. Can you tell me what that community is?
We are Buddhist monks, and we arrived PEI about 10 years ago, and in search of a location that's suitable for our religious practice, spiritual practice. And we're looking all over the world for that location. And we started out in Asia and eventually found our way here. And at first we're really uncertain if this is going to work out. I know the winter long, it's scary enough. So the first couple of years, the main goal is to see if we can survive the winter, and which we did. So eventually more and more monks came, and then we started to call this place home, and it's been a wonderful journey for us.
So tell me about that first winter.
I can speak for myself. I flew into Charlottetown Airport, and with all kinds of uncertainty and unknowns with my two luggages, and I'm wondering, why here? What's so special about this place? Who am I going to meet? Is the monastery going to be okay? Am I going to be okay? And as I look out the window from the plane, I saw the red soil of the island. And I look at my own robe. I was like, man, that might actually work out. So that's my first impression of the island. Not sure if anyone has a similar experience, but that's the first impression I got of the island. So as soon as I step off the plane, I thought, okay, this is it. Winter, snow, red soil, that's start from here.
Well, that's an interesting connection, because even though it's kind of a quirky little funny thing, you know, that you have your robe that is exactly the same color as PEI dirt. People are connected to the dirt and the land here. And so that's a very interesting coincidence that you would blend right in to the soil of Prince Edward Island. That's great. And Venerable Eli, for you, the experience is a little different because you grew up on Prince Edward Island.
Yes, correct. So I was born and raised here, and I joined the monastery about 10 years ago. So I guess I play a different role in the sense of I'm very used to this place, and I have family here and friends here, but then joined, this group and been in this community and have been kind of, you know, watching them from inside, you know, come to a place that was unknown and getting used to it, and me being very used to it here and trying to, and then also seeing on the other side of, say, some of the Islanders friends and people who are also unused to, you know, change and a new group. So I've played this interesting role of kind of trying to bridge that gap, being in the middle, you know, trying to help both sides have this mutual understanding.
And I would think that your role has been very key and important over the last 10 years.
I think so. And it seems like it's growing more and more, you know, as I learn more too about the group, because it was a lot of learning for me too, to understand where both sides are coming from. And actually through this experience, I've been kind of forced to understand Islanders even more. There's a lot of things you know, as a kid, you don't think of, mm-hmm. You don't, you know, why land is so important to Islanders. And, you know, as you grow older and you start to get more involved talking to farmers and talking to local people, I'm actually learning more and more about the island. I feel now in this half year that I have, you know, the 30 years living here.
Right. Well, that makes complete sense. I think, for somebody, well, like myself, I didn't grow up on Prince Edward Island, but when I came here many years ago, like 30 or more, I'm still learning. And, you know, I didn't grow up in the rural parts of Prince Edward Island, so wasn't familiar with farming and agriculture in any way, but feel now that I can say that I am attached in a deeper way. So it takes, I think it's a lifetime of learning, in fact.
I think so.
Yeah. So you both found a place, Venerable Dan moving here, Venerable Eli growing up and living here and now being part of this community. For Islanders, it's normal for them to belong to Prince Edward Island. You know, you've heard people say, you know, I'm an Islander and you're not, because you weren't born here or whatever. Like, I'm not an Islander, even though I've been here forever and my children are Islanders, but you know what I'm talking about, right? What does that mean to you? Like, when you are having a conversation with somebody who is an Islander, do you feel like you belong?
Well, as we first settled here, being a Buddhist, and we try to be as, you know, not intrusive as possible. So at first we thought the best approach will probably be just stay quiet, stay low-key, and don't intrude into other people's space. So we started out very quiet and then not very engaged in the community. It turned out that that made people even more curious about us. And then we started learning about, okay, on this island, you know, everybody knows everyone. You can't just hide yourself. You have to get out there, meet people, and then know their stories and have your story heard. So we took that advice and started, you know, getting more involved in the community. And I think that's how we became more and more known to people. Mm-hmm. And even though, yes, we heard this saying that, you know, if you weren't born on the island, you are not an Islander, but we actually found so many connections on the human level. Yes, I might not be born here, but there's so many things that we treasure in common, so many things that we can understand and learn from each other. And I think that's where we started. And then over the years, there are many stories that kind of, you know, and with Venerable Eli's help, kind of bridge that gap. And yes, we're still learning and there's still new things to learn every day. But I think we're moving along and we're on the right track.
Excellent. And for you, Venerable Eli, being an, like, you're an Islander. So you bring that to your community. Are there any other Islanders, so-called, you know, Islanders within your community?
No, currently there isn't, no.
You're it.
Yeah, I'm it. Oh.
Wow, that must be pretty special. Do you have a special place that no, I'm just kidding.
No, we always go to him if we were wondering or we're curious, okay, how would Islanders think about this and what's the right way to do it here? And I think some monks are actually picking up on the special island way of saying yes, the inhaling yes.
Yep.
Some of us are getting good at that. So
Dan's been practicing for the last 4 months.
Yeah.
Okay, let's. Yeah.
And I'm trying to teach him how to recognize, every other car on the road and who it is and whose car it is.
Oh, yeah.
And then I see them coming from a mile away.
And you have to do the one finger thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When you have that the other day. You go like put your finger up like that on the steering wheel, and then they know. Oh, yeah. That's just. Venerable Dan, of course. So you are in Eastern Prince Edward Island, and Venerable Eli, you grew up in Iris, I believe?
I was actually born in Charlottetown.
Okay.
And at the age of 18, I think I've moved to 18 different places in PEI. So we were all over the map. So I had a good experience of, being able to live in different areas, go to different schools, and through that meet a lot of different people. In the end, coming on the end, I don't know what the end is, not the end of my life, but coming on later on, I was living out east in Iris, Caledonia area. And that's how I got to meet the monks, because they were in Little Sands. So it was very close to me.
Yeah, right on. Okay, so then when I think of the island being a place where people can feel welcome, sometimes they don't feel welcome. And I know, Venerable Dan, you were talking about at first when the monks settled here, there was this kind of intuition to kind of be hidden and not do a whole lot, but then realizing that obviously you needed to be more engaged as a community. What were some of the challenges, or maybe they still exist today, with regards to, coming here from many of the Buddhist monks do come from different places in the world. Being welcome is one thing, but sometimes people don't feel welcome. What is your experience about that?
I would say that most of the experiences are not actually not feeling welcome, but mostly just, people are curious about us, they've never seen, our robes, our lifestyle before. And so most of it is because of that. And as soon as we introduce each other, we say hi, we visit them and have a cup of tea and get to know where you're from and share some stories. And I think that goes away so quickly. And I remember that first couple of years there, we do this walking meditation, and we'll walk from one campus to another. And that first year, there's a kid who missed the school bus and was staying home. And it happened that he saw like a group of monks, hundreds of them in single file, walking silently, not even talking, not even waving, and just stare, dead straight. And walking by his house. And he was so worried, so scared, and he called his mom, and his mom called the neighbor, and the neighbor called the cops, and everybody was so worried. And eventually we found out, whoops, like even by not talking, not saying anything to anyone, we still create some kind of a surprise. But eventually we visit the family and just tell them, okay, sorry about that. And we learned that, actually, even as simple as just doing a walking meditation, that you have to let the community know ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So the next year we applied to the Department of Highway and Safety, let them know that this is our route. And we passed flyers in the mailbox of the house that we're going through. And everybody actually were expecting to see us. They come out and say hi. And then we thought, okay, that wasn't too difficult. Just, let people know what you're doing. And then, like Venerable Eli said, for Islanders, if you get to know them, they'll be your best friend forever. So as you know, as long as we get over that first, you know, I don't know where you're from, and I don't know what this is about. And once we get over that, it's been a very smooth and enjoyable experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And for you, Venerable Eli, being a person of color growing up on Prince Edward Island, associating yourself as an islander, was there any kind of experience for you that at any point made you feel unwelcome?
For me, again, when you're real young, you're really not thinking about that stuff. Obviously, I knew my color of skin was different than even my own family. But for me, all my family, all my uncles, all my cousins, everybody was white. So to me, I didn't really think, you know, I didn't really think, oh, I'm different than them. This is all my family, and this is just what I'm used to. And of course, you know, kids will be kids, and even grown-ups will be grown-ups, and there will always be some kind of interactions. But from my personal experience, it was never really like, again, I think it's just a lack of understanding. It wasn't really that, okay, this person really hates me for the color of my skin. It's okay, they make a joke, and you know, usually I was pretty easygoing, so I just laugh it off, or I just go with it. And I probably learned this from living here, just go with it, everyone laughs for a bit, and then it's over. Or, you know, they make a joke, and but it's not that like they really mean it, because actually they don't even, they're kids too, so they don't even understand the context of what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it wasn't too bad. As I did grow older, and like as I became a young adult, there was some incidents where it was maybe a little more severe. But again, I probably subconsciously just learned how to manage and deal with it here living on the island. So I never let it kind of get under my skin, just laugh it off. If that's what you want to say, that's what you want to say. Like, I'm still going to keep living my life and go on with my day.
Yeah.
So, of course, I don't even think you have to be a different color of skin. You can just be different in any way, and you can get picked on or called a name or whatever.
That's true.
And I really think, from my personal experience, it's just, I really think that it's not that they're like completely, like they'd be really racist here or whatever it may be. I think it's just a lack of understanding.
Yeah, I think that's a really polite way of saying it. And, you know, when we also understand and learn about fear, and that people have a lot of fear about something different than themselves, and it can come out in very ugly ways, and sometimes it can be addressed and dealt with in very friendly, understanding ways. So, yeah, thanks for sharing that. I appreciate that. So you've both been part of the community for 10 years, correct?
Yeah, roughly, yeah.
Yeah. So does this mean, now that you're here, living on Prince Edward Island, is this, if everything is going to work out, like, is this where you will be for the rest of your life?
Well, when I joined the monastery, I didn't think of like I'll be leaving the monastery in Asia. And because my family moved to the States when I was 16. And so when I joined the monastery, I thought there's no other chance for me to speak English again. But, you know, next year I flew over here, totally unexpected. So I can't say that for sure we'll be here for, you know, the rest of our journey.
Don't even know if we'll be here tomorrow.
Fair enough. So Venerable Dan, your family is in the States now, or?
I was born and raised in Taiwan, and we moved to the States when I was 16. And now my parents are back to Taiwan again, and my brother's still in the States, so.
What's that like to be so far away from your parents?
Actually, a lot of the stuff on PEI actually remind me of my childhood. Believe it or not, when I first learned that here people don't even lock their doors, and you can walk into any neighbor's door, kitchen, and with That actually surprised me, but it reminded me of, okay, actually that's how it was when I was a kid. I was able to walk into my neighbors and people would just look out for each other. And the sense of a community, actually, I was very surprised that I can still feel that here on PEI. And that's the thing where the whole monastery is actually appreciating. Most of them, probably from bigger cities, and where, like Mirabel Ida was saying, that here you can actually just see a truck, a pickup truck, go by, and then just from the speed of the driver's drive is going, you can know that, okay, that's so and so down the street. When I was working in the States, I spent 2 hours on the commute. I thinking back, I never pay attention to who is actually on the same road with me. But here is that kind of, okay, you know a person so much that you even know how fast this person drives.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually got me thinking, if you actually pay that much attention to the people around you, it doesn't really matter if you're from away and you can connect with them instantly if you know them in such a deep level. And I think that's something that I learned, even if it might seem very mundane, and Islanders are probably used to it. But for me, that's a very valuable lesson, actually.
Yeah, it's like that for me, too. finding your place and your sense of belonging in your community with the monastery here on Prince Edward Island. So do you, when you step outside of that and, you're in Montague getting groceries or you're somewhere, is that connection change for you, or do you feel that's that same sense as you move around?
For me, and I've actually just noticed it. It's very interesting you're asking this question, because just recently I've noticed it, that, that feeling of home and getting home, you're comfortable and, you're out doing errands and chores and whatever, but you still have this, there's this draw and you're not completely grounded. And once you get home, you're, oh, it's so great to be home. I see for myself, I'm starting to get this now here at the monastery. I really like it here, and I really like what we're doing and helping out here. And when I'm out, doing errands or grabbing stuff, I have this kind of the sense of, not being home. And when I'm back here, I'm completely grounded. So I've really noticed this this summer, actually. And I think it's sort of like you're saying, of that sense of belonging and actually defining that this is my home, this is my place, I'm safe and I'm comfortable at. So for me, it's quite interesting to experience that feeling, for almost like what was it, would be a second home for me.
Mm, cool. And Venerable Dan?
From my personal experience, the first couple of years when I'm actually in town, shopping and meeting people, I can still feel that, people are looking, okay, who is this? And then what are they doing here? But this past year, and I think it's completely changed, people actually come up and say hi and ask about, okay, I heard you guys are doing the fundraising thing for the food boxes. That's very great. And when can I sign up? And people are very friendly. They come up and say hi. And the other day, Vermo Eli's uncle actually called me Little Dan. Well, that made me feel like part of the family. I mean, come up, that brings back childhood memories. We're not even related, but to be called that, that is a sign of, you're welcome here, you're accepted, we treat you as a family. Yeah. And so it's a very special feeling.
That's very sweet. Very sweet. What are your earliest memories of belonging, both of you? Like as a child. I think I stumped you.
I think for me, I grew up with my mom, and also I had a stepbrother and stepsister. But they were with their father through the weekdays and just came on the weekends. So really, it was always just me and mom. And I think probably the earliest memory of my mother gives me the sense of belonging, because we had such a tight relationship. I mean, it wasn't just mother and son. It was kind of like we're best friends. And even growing up together and growing older, like we were we really taught each other. She taught me a lot of things, and I've taught her a lot of things just through life's experience. And even we touched a little briefly on it before of, obviously she's a white lady, and having a colored son here in PEI, she said that experience herself really opened her eyes to life and to a lot of things that she was, unaware of at a young age. So to answer your question again, just I think my first memory with my mom and being with my mom, I think gives me that first memory of belonging.
Nice.
And I can maybe come from the monastery perspective, when we first feel, the sense of belonging. I think it was back in 2015, we saw this brochure about roadside cleanup. And that brochure is actually given to us by a neighbor. And they told us that, they've been trying to help us be more involved in the community. And that's a way of actually doing something with the whole island together. And we didn't know that until that year. We actually started going out and then picking up, trashes from the ditch. And actually, it's very well received, and people actually come up to us and give us a thumbs up. And we felt that, so just as simple as doing something that everybody else is doing, and that instantly, create a bond with the whole island. Mm. And we learn from that. So then we start paying more attention to, what's going on here on the island. And we realize that it's a very tight community. When someone is in need, someone in the community needs help, everybody jumps in to help. Mm-hmm. And so we thought at that time, we're just learning how to, bake bread for ourselves. Then we learned that 1/6 of the island families will have children going to school hungry. And we thought maybe this is something we can do. And this has the least cultural and language barrier, because that was one of the biggest challenge for a lot of the monks in our monastery. But baking bread and sending them to people who need them, that seems like something we could do. So that's also another way of us doing something that other islanders are doing, just helping out each other. Mm-hmm. And I think that opened the door for us to be more visible and also contribute to the community. And then I think next year there was the Fort McMurray fire in Alberta. And we thought, now we're in Canada and this is happening right here. Let's do something to help out. So we started doing our first fundraiser with our bread, and we sell them for $1 each. And the monastery actually matched every dollar. And when we donate the money to Red Cross, the federal government also matched the money. So it turned out, we just bake like maybe 8,000 bread rolls, and that turned into 40,000 funds for people mm-hmm. in need. And we thought, there's nothing about, where you're from. That's just a very fundamental human nature. And if you can bring out the best of your genuine, care and love, and I don't think there's any problem, fitting in Canada. So that's a very common value here.
Yeah, I think that is also a universal thing. And yes. You've encapsulated that sense of belonging very eloquently. So thank you, Venerable Dan, for that. Listen, both of you, I really appreciate it that you've taken the time to sit down and share with me some of your experiences and what it's like for you to be where you are and how you feel you belong. And I know that anyone who will listen to this episode will be very appreciative and have walked away knowing a little bit more about the Buddhist monks on Prince Edward Island, and especially for you, Venerable Dan and Venerable Eli. Thank you so much. I truly appreciate this.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Hope to see you on the road.
Say hi, wave.
I'll wave. Take care.
Thank you so much to Venerable Dan and Venerable Eli for sharing their stories of belonging and connection. Don't forget to give them a wave when you see them out and about. And thank you for listening. If you'd like to support this podcast like Peter Roccovina does, please visit patreon.com/thebelongpodcast. See you next time.